water. Water they drink out there. So I tried to be careful what I said so that he couldn't truthfully quote anything I saw in Dick Wilson's column, who works for Look and the Coles's, 3 days ago, that Freeman had had to rewrite his speech in Rome and all about it. Well, you know, I didn't tell him that. I didn't tell Wilson that. Now, who you reckon told him? Well, either Freeman or his outfit. I didn't mention it to him, but he told me, so I just let him chatter all he's going to say after about an hour, and then I said, okay, when's this going to happen? He said, December the 8th. I said, well, now, you go back and send Bowles this wire. I presented my views in great detail to the president, and I was very pleased at his general attitude. I anticipate if the food minister makes a statement to the cabinet and to the parliament that he's scheduled to make, that decisions will promptly flow that will please us. Sincerely, Freeman. And I said, now that's going to give us over the weekend. And if they do this, the thing I would like to be in a position of doing is to not just make a monthly allotment now, but to make enough to get him by the whole visit and go ahead. I thought the Comer memorandum was very, very good. And Comer's not going to be anything like you, because he's not as adult as you are, and he wants to be, and he's but he doesn't put this race in this with enough real maturity and so forth. But he is the next best thing I think we have under the circumstances. And if you're 18 months is up and you're going to leave us right in the middle of the goddamn war, why, he's the best sergeant we can move in if the general's going to just quit and say, I want to go home and play checkers. But he's got to take on George Ball to begin with.
I know that.
And Rusk, Ball has a great influence with Rusk. And Rusk is a good and fair man. And Rusk is the greatest admirer you got in Washington. I think you're a very unusual fellow, but I don't think you're as great as Rusk does.
You've been most generous.
No, he said that yesterday. I told him I'd watched every moment from I came in to see any time that you ever in any way took unfair advantage of him because of your closeness to the president, and I had never seen him. And not one little iota of it, and although it had required a great deal of submersion on your part, being a staff man instead of a big Cadillac cabinet man, all those things. Then he unloosed, and he made me a long speech about your character, and he went into Bill a little bit, and this fellow has great field. He really left me feeling that the world was better, and he was a very big man, and he just, he wound up by saying there's no job in the government or the world that you are not capable of that he has run into. And every person we analyzed, he said he cannot evaluate this as Mac does. He will not be as objective as he is. He will not be as scintillating. He can't write it. He can't do it in a hurry. He can't be as precise. But he'll do so and so. And the man he really wants is Alex Johnson and Abe Shade.
Yeah.
That's who he wants. McNamara, I guess, wants Mac Naughton. But he does like Comer. I like them all. I don't have any prejudices in the group. Alex Johnson, I'm very indebted to him. And I have confidence, but I agree with your... I just had to agree with practically every analysis you made. I thought it was... you had a facility for giving their weaknesses without being brutal. And doing it in few words. But I guess that it all comes back to the way you started off. At least for the moment, that's the way we ought to handle it. So I would call him in without blowing him up and having to fall down until we make a decision, because we don't know what we'll do. But I think I would let him see these Vietnam things a little more.
Well, do that right away. I think I'd better pull my Philip Cooper before the trouble. I think he's quite worked out here. I'm going to get Dick Helms to give him a ride home back to the agency. I think you ever had a phone conference with him. I found to say I've been disappointed.
I don't know him very well. I'm not against him. Maybe what you do is keep him and let the new man decide after he... The new man's not going to know as much as he does, probably. Let the new man decide where...
It's a bit of a problem. Palmer and he's 5 years old. They've been running in the traces in competition for 20 years. Well, that's why I'm concerned. Glad to know you didn't win it again.
No. I like, far as I know, every man in your shop. I don't have a, none of them have been abrasive with me. I don't find Comer abrasive at all. Rusk said he was quite abrasive.
Oh, this is really George Paul, Mr. President. I would discount that. George has never been as generous about this office as the Secretary of State. He really feels that he could do better.
Comer has this that I think they must interpret for abrasiveness. He has a duty to recommend to the president. That's his assignment, and he discharges that duty just like McNamara does, and like Rusk does. And then he doesn't give in to the president's wife just because she thinks it ought to be something different. I ran into him one night in Greece about 2 o'clock in the morning, having a fist fight with Busby almost. And I just stood at the door and listened for about 20 minutes before I went in. This is damn good. I just went on back to sleep and said, I can't go wrong if two men feel as strong as they do. And both of them are as devoted to their country as they are. Comer said, well, I don't give a damn what the president's, the vice president's done for the last 20 years. I'm not interested in that. What's going to do the next 20 minutes? I'm not going to recommend this. I'm going to tell him what I want. If he doesn't want to do it, that's his business. And, so anyway, he feels his thing strong enough to advocate him, and I like that. I do want him to say, here's the other side of the coin, and give it a good picture, and then say, now, if you want my judgment, here it is. I think you do that better than anybody else. You better tell him just watch it a little bit.
Yeah.
Nobody ever charged you with not taking a decision. I mean, not making up your mind and not taking a side. But you don't take it till the president has a chance to look at him, and then you say, here it is. And then if the president goes the other way, you don't go down and sulk.
Yeah.
So those are the two things that he ought to bear.
He's no sulker, but he has got to look at the other side of the coin and be sure you get a chance.
If for no other reason, to present it and give other people a chance to knock it over.
Yeah.
Okay, if you'll work on two things, I think it would be very good. One is to try to get Rusk, McNamara, and company. They want to see the president now immediately. I'm willing to come, because when I come, I give up everything here, and I'm going to be hard to deal with for 2 weeks, because I'm not up to it. But I'll come anytime y'all are ready.
You've got to get ready first.
To present this. Then when you're ready to say, here's what Bundy and McNamara and Rusk recommend, and here are the other two alternatives. We recommend a pause or we don't recommend a pause. We recommend Westmoreland coming or we don't. We recommend this number of 1,000 people, we don't. Then I think that you've got to get your military components, your peace components, your budget components all in there together. I don't think anybody knows anything about the budget but McNamara. But I think you're going to have to get Shoof working to see how we can separate it. Because if I go up there and ask for $115 billion, I'm going to lose support on everything. My 70 young congressmen can't take it. They can't run the office on that. And we won't get what we're asking. So from a practical standpoint, we have to show that we're going to ask for $2 billion in new money we're going to ask for $5 billion in new money for the Great Society and so forth. And we're going to save $3 of it by stopping things. And it's going to be $2 billion extra. That's all it's going to be, just $2 billion extra. Now, defense is going to be another 15, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's got to be made somehow a separate issue.
What they're going to do is take our Vietnam appropriations and kill our Great Society.
Yeah.
And they would have done it, they'd have killed it before we authorized it if we'd done it last year.
Right, and they'd have killed the whole rescue program.
Now, McNamara is just excellent, as you know and I know in all these fields, but he really has never got his reserve thing through yet, and a good many things that we, and with the Congress, we just can't rely completely on his judgment, and I don't think he's made a judgment on it anyway. I just think he's looking at it from his desk.
He's just counting up the bills. He's not deciding how to present it.
And even if I had, I'd much rather, Mac, go back for $10 billion supplemental.
Yeah.
Next June, just before they leave.
Yeah.
And to put it in the January one.
I can see that.
Because if we got along out there and we were doing pretty well, or if we got in deeper,
yeah,
we could get some patriotism going and we could go back. But right now, with the election coming up, most of these folks will get their primaries out in May and June.
You don't want a January number in your deficit.
What I want is I want a minimum in that defense budget to get by as long as I can. In Vietnam, I'd like to try to find some way to separate it, come up with a special message on it, or to put in enough to get us along part of the year and then come up for more later. I know another thing we ought to do, and maybe we could use Hubert on this. We got the president's inauguration coming up to the Philippines.
Yeah.
We just got to get some extra troops in there from Korea, from Australia, from the Philippines, and any other place we can.
Yeah. They are pressing like hell for you, rather too much, but I think, and therefore I think you might want to make this decision fast.
Let's get somebody in the State Department, without any reference to any individual, Harriman or Hubert, anybody else, to let's get Bill Bundy this morning, tell him I would like to have a memo on the potential people we might go to bed with on getting extra troops, in what amount, and let's be so optimistic that we know we'll never achieve it.
Yeah.
But let's see how many extra troops we can bring from Korea, how many extra ones we could get, how many we could get in the Philippines, how many extra ones if we get another 1,000 or so.
I'd rather ask Tom McNaughton for that, Mr. President.
All right.
I think they know where the numbers of the bodies are faster.
All right. Just get me a memo on it,
yeah,
by tomorrow night.
Yeah.
All the potentials, and whether, then you look at it without discussing it with anyone. I don't want this in the paper before we go ask them, because it would be suicide. But you ask them, and let's see, I mean, you look at it, then you talk to me tomorrow and say, I think that here's how we might proposition them on it.
Yeah.
Harriman can do some of this.
Yeah,
Hubert can do some of it. What are our possibilities? Korea, Philippines, Australia, New Zealand?
Australia, New Zealand, Thailand, if we told them that it was more valuable than what they are doing and gave them and paid them back some way. The Chinese nationalists, I don't think we want to do that. And that's about it for troops. The other thing that you can argue with Wilson is when he wins his next election, wouldn't he like to share the load and have us share back with him in Malaysia? That would be a lot better for us, much as we can't do it now with one vote. I don't see anybody in Europe.
Well, if you plan this out, then give me a reading on when I ought to come back or whether you all come down here Monday or Tuesday.
I think, Mr. President, my advice to you would be let us come to you, because you don't need to be here next week that I know of for other reasons. And if you're going to be I don't know what you've decided about these distinguished visitors. I know what Mrs. Johnson decided, but I don't know if you've got the final quote.
That's what I'm afraid I'll do. You talk to McNamara and Rusk and get them in these meetings, and don't let them do anything else. Keep them in the White House till these things are decided. Just do that as an ultimatum from me.
You want others from the White House in the meeting? Sometimes make the department. Joe and Bill were terribly helpful yesterday. But
yes, I think if they'll quit talking, if they just don't talk to the press. I just don't like to read these. I see this morning that we got a big story in here from Max Frankel on what the senior people are advising. Where does that come from?
Just asked that question, Mr. President. And I'll tell you something funny. I got a memorandum on my desk yesterday afternoon from Thompson, my own Far Eastern man, saying this is what is being said in State Department intelligence circles, in the junior levels of your brother's bureau. not match the national estimates. There's a fellow named Alan Whiting feels this way very strongly, and I don't know whether he talked to Frank. He's normally very discreet, but this is his school of thought. Suddenly appearing on the front page.
Right now, what we might do then, if McNamara and Wheeler will really work at it, and you can get Charlie Shules in on it, and you can go California, y'all can find some other budget ways. And without too much of a buildup, we can cover it with maybe Udall or somebody else bringing them in the same day on budget matters, and bringing you and Comer in and just not making anything, we're not going to blow up the whole world of one day decision. Come in here. One, we got a conveyor now. It takes 40 minutes longer, but it lands right at the race and gets here almost